Welcome back, everyone. This is class four of Ourselves, Our Souls, and Bodies. I am Casey. I want to try to make the most of our time today because I want to try to cover as much territory as we can and have lots of time for as much time for conversation as we possibly can, because at the end is a time I hope to do some resource sharing, recognizing that some of you have already walked at least a part of this, having the talk, developing healthy kids, developing kids that have healthy understandings of sex. You've already been doing some of this. You already know some of the resources. I want to make some notes of that. I want to, before I go very far, last week Natalia Moronduk, who was sitting, Natalia, who I don't see yet today, but she may come in, who is a professor at Perkins of professor of theology. I don't know that, you may not know that. She's the one who had the little baby and the little carrier. She is marvelous, and she recommended this book, which I immediately went out and bought, and it is awesome. So it's Talking with Your Child from Birth to Adolescence, Sex and Faith. Short little book. I highly recommend it. I'm happy to loan it out to you if any of you would like to buy it. I got it on Amazon like this, so because it's very much recently in print. All right. We're building on the conversation from last week, talking about how we have the talk. I want to acknowledge two different fundamental, because today what I really want to do is go through the stages. Essentially, all of the resources that I pulled from recognize that kids who are this big and kids who are this big and kids who are this big, you talk to them differently. So I want to hit highlights of what we would do with different stages, recognizing that some of it will be relevant, each part will be relevant to different people, and do just a real quick overview. This is not necessarily Casey's show. This is my effort to condense a lot of information from what all I've been reading in the last couple of weeks. Feel free to chime in if you've been through some of this with your kids at different developmental stages and offer back your own wisdom. Would be happy to hear from everybody. Wait, what? Oh, I got my slides out of order. We'll come back to that. Raising kids who make good choices. I want to come back to something I said last week, which is something I read, so helpful. Raising kids who make good choices, boys and girls, framing techniques for our forming, for our conversations, for our imbuing them with values, essentially taking that sponge metaphor that the lady on the video talked about, how when a kid's sponge is full, there's less that can get into it. If you filled them with good things, then they're already soaked. And essentially what a couple of the folks I've been reading about really recommend is with girls who have high sense of self-esteem, high sense of the value of their own worth and dignity, strong sense of self-confidence, make better choices, are less susceptible to be taken advantage of, to be coerced, they make better choices, and that we want to nurture in our girls a real sense of what love really looks like, because the message that they're going to hear is one that love looks like sex, even from a young age, and we want to help them understand what love really looks like. If you're a parent in here of a little girl, these are things that sort of can frame like all of what we're doing. Trying to cultivate strong self-confidence and an honest, good, healthy sense of what love looks like. And for boys, respecting the dignity of other people. I started to put respect for girls because first and foremost among it is a healthy respect for women. Because women are often, and most often, the subjugated ones in society. I just saw, is this right? Did I just see that Russian parliament voted to overturn the law against domestic violence? So, like 580-3 was the vote. So we're in a world that we felt like we were on an arc of progress towards health and equality. And we're like hitting some skids in our wider society. And of course, we know the wider conversation during the election cycle about what is appropriate talk about women. That didn't seem to affect everybody in their choices. So, men speaking respectfully and being respectful of others, and self-control and discipline. Self-control and discipline are such important things for boys to learn, not only about their themselves, but as it relates to their interactions with other people. I want to say information does not equal permission. So we're going to talk a little bit about what information we should be sharing with our kids. This is something that Kate Ott writes. She talks a lot about studies and surveys that say, again and again, information does not equal permission. Just because you talk to your kids about giving them lots of information about their bodies, about sex, about health and consequences, just because you talk to them as adolescents or as teenagers about contraception or a variety of different things, if we're uncomfortable doing that because we feel like by talking about it we're giving them permission, again and again, she says, surveys prove that that's just not true. Information does not equal permission. Information equals equipping our kids. And tied together with values formation, our kids make better choices. She cites a statistic that kids who have more information, more access to information about sex and sexuality when they are adolescents and teenagers, their first sexual encounter is close to 2 years older than kids who have none. So if we think that we're worried that by giving them information we're like telling them it's okay, that actually statistically doesn't prove out. All right. There we go. All right. Quickly through the ages. Ages 4 to 6. We should be instilling in our kids that God made our bodies and our bodies are good. As I talked about last week, we should begin using proper terminology for our bodies and our body parts. We need to all get out of the habit of calling them our privates.
You jinxed me. I heard vagina this week more than I've ever heard. I mean, we always call it that, but this week for some reason it was talked about.
It was all over the place. Kate Ott actually takes it up one notch. She uses the word vulva a lot. She uses the word vulva a lot, and I just kept thinking of that Friends episode where Ross is invited by his girlfriend to talk dirty, and he doesn't know how to do that, so he says vulva. Hysterical. We need to teach them what is appropriate touching. What is appropriate touching? First, they're going to be exploring their own bodies, and we can say that's okay, but maybe we don't want to have our hands in our pants in public. What's appropriate touching? Where is that appropriate? And also, what's appropriate in terms of who else can touch us in our privates? And we need to teach our kids, even from this little age, who is appropriate to touch us and when. And you need to clearly use your parental instincts to know how to have that conversation, because we're not trying to freak our kids out, we're trying to equip them. Remember, get the baby out of the tummy. The baby is in the uterus, not in mommy's tummy. I share that because the ladies who make birds and bees, that's like their big thing, and I think it's hilarious. Get the baby out of the tummy, start to equip our kids with correct information, and begin to introduce what marriage is. It's a healthy time to help our kids understand why people are joined together in a relationship of fidelity, a covenant of trust, a covenant of love. For us as a congregation, for me in my family, helping understand that marriage doesn't necessarily look like what all the picture books look like, man and woman, but that we know people who are married who are two men or two women, and helping my kids understand and sort of get their heads around that. And actually, they get that like that. So, any questions about any of this? If you're in this stage, have you been doing any of this? Yeah? Some of you?
Passed it?
All right.
So, like, how out of the tummy are we getting?
No, I mean, just saying. The birds and the bees ladies say the baby is in the mommy's uterus. Because the kid, if the tummy is where we eat and food goes. And so their big deal is the baby like where the food goes? And it just starts to get confusing.
Are we discussing an exit route at this point?
Only if they ask. And you could if your child is asking lots of follow-up questions, you need to be prepared to offer information. But we reach different stages of different capacity to understand and comprehend. So you're probably going to get that question in the next phase. You're not there yet, I don't think. Maybe.
Well. You might get to this later, but yeah. I want to ask how much is too much for this age group, because I'm getting a lot of questions, and I'm comfortable
sure.
giving that information, but I don't want to arm him also with things that he may not be ready for or discuss with other children in his school.
Sure.
And then I'm like maybe seen as the bad parent.
Yeah.
Too much.
One of our parenting techniques is when a question comes at us that we are surprised by or a little caught off guard, that seems maybe a little out of the usual, or maybe something that we're not quite ready to address because we don't know where they're coming from, we'll ask, well, tell me why you're asking that. You know, tell me more about why you're asking this question, and hear from the child a bit more specificity about the derivation of their curiosity. And then that could help guide in on how much information to share. Maybe they're so that we don't offload way more information and they're like, well, that's not really what I was interested in knowing. Yeah.
Is this an appropriate age to introduce the idea of boundaries? Meaning that,
yes.
I was a child and I was strongly encouraged, if not forced, to possibly hug a relative that maybe I didn't know.
Oh, great point.
There was anything going on, but when is my body, and when is it the property of my parents? That sort of thing.
This is not to say that it couldn't be in the earlier phase of 4 to 6, but what Kate Ott really points out is by the time you're in this first, second, third grade, your body is really your body. When your kid is a pre-kindergartner and a kindergartner, they don't totally have awareness, like their body is... It's harder for them to contain. First, second, third grade, your body is your body. And their body is their body. And that's when we need to be careful about especially telling our kids, go give a hug to... this is something that started to circulate, I'd say, well over a decade ago, this pushback by the parenting community and the therapy and the psychological community saying that when you tell your kids to go give somebody a hug, you're actually implanting them confusing signals about their body and their ability to control it and to direct it.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I mentioned earlier. Like our younger daughter, from probably when she was 3, she said she doesn't like to be kissed
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. And so we've always said, what do you have on it for your own body?
Mm-hmm.
And I think to that age, we have a 9-month-old too, and so we always say you have ownership of your body.
Yeah.
You have ownership of your body. So when they're playing with him and he starts to cry, we tell him, just remind him, he has ownership of his body,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't like that, right?
Great.
So I think they can catch that pretty early.
So there you go.
But I think if your concern is that, you have somebody coming over and you want them to be respectful of the fact that they've come to visit them, we always say, okay, well, if you don't want to give them a hug, give them a fist bump.
Yeah.
Something like that, so it's still a respectful
awesome.
Sort of space, but you're still acknowledging the fact that they came to see you or something like that.
Yeah, because that's the parenting balancing act. It's like we want to demonstrate respect and awareness of this other person. We want to teach them to acknowledge the presence of this loved one or friend or person we're trying to introduce them to, while at the same time not telling them, because boundaries or the arc of intimacy and trying to help them engage in healthy and appropriate ways while also not crossing over lines of intimacy.
Well, and I don't know if you can ask if some of Jessica have kids, but I always ask children before I give them a hug, kids that they're not close to, that I don't wear well, can I give you a hug as a greeting or
yep.
as a goodbye thing? Because if they don't know me that well, they're not comfortable with that. But if you ask, then they can say yes or no.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a great thing to do.
Well, I had another question before you
Okay.
I think our, I feel like our kids are kind of similar to yours, where they ask so many questions, it feels like it does move quickly. Yeah. Like the, a few weeks ago, Francis was just asking, like, why is this stuff for privacy, basically? That feels like that's jumping to the end. Then you have to talk about the shadow sides of it, basically, right? Hmm. Like, why is, say, touching yourself for privacy only?
Mm-hmm.
Or why is going to the bathroom for privacy?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of hard to answer.
I wonder if any of you have been asked that by your child, how you tried to, like, when they say, okay, yeah, but why?
Sometimes you keep it as simple as you can. Is the advice we've been given. Just because they're asking the question doesn't mean they're prepared for the answer that you might want to give them. So you have to dumb it down a little bit and keep it simple and say things like, "Well, it's for adults," and just usually they just want you to give them a response,
mm-hmm.
and it can be a partial response, but not a full blown version of shadow side. Like,
mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes you know. People don't do these things for the right reasons. And that's all they need to hear. And then later when they're a little bit older, then you can give them other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But usually what I'm hearing is that they're asking questions and we think they're ready for the answer and they're not ready for
mm-hmm.
the answer. So you have to, that's why the breakdown of the ages is so good, to kind of guide you through the path of what's appropriate at that age, what they can truly register, understand, and then communicate properly to their peers.
I am aware of just how beautiful the question that flows directly out of the innocence of a child is. Like, that's really actually a beautiful thing. Well, why is this particular area on my body something I have to cover? I actually think that's a beautiful thing, and we don't want to squash that sort of that innate innocence and curiosity while also saying, well, hello. This is just something that we in our family do, and we in our schools and in our society, we cover that area because that's a private area. You don't want to put fear or instill shame. That's the thing, is when it flips over into shame, then you're leaving really deep, lasting, impressions on our kids. And we don't want to make it shameful while also saying this just isn't something that we show to everyone. So balancing that, please, yeah.
I have older children. My oldest is 12. And one of the things I'll do is just for hygiene reasons. You wear underwear.
Absolutely.
You have to stay clean.
Yeah.
And the whole shame thing, they get that from their peers pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, and also another thing that we've learned is that they tune out when you're giving too much information.
They do.
They just tune out.
Yeah.
So just pay attention if they're tuning out. They've heard enough.
Yeah. I want to come back to that point. This, God made our bodies and they are good. You can understand that to be implied in all of the developmental stages. Because at every stage, our kids are going to need to hear that and understand it and appreciate it in a new way. And you and I need to hear that also. Because some of our own dysfunction as adults is around understanding the goodness of our bodies and really soaking that in, and us as adults demonstrating good and healthy choices because we understand that our bodies are good. So there's no age at which that's too young, and that helps to combat, that's filling the sponge up, hopefully, so that the shame stuff that they're getting from their peers and from you know, movies and TV and all the other stuff has a harder time penetrating. Okay, 7 to 9, you're really beginning to build self-esteem in boys and girls. You're beginning to instill values. And that's not just about sex. That's also about friendship. Ideas like generosity, forgiveness, compassion and kindness. That those things all are part of this broader conversation. And when your kids are first, second, third grade, this is like super core value instill. This is prime time for instilling values. This is when your body begins to really belong to you, although exactly you want to help your kids understand that at any stage. Basic understanding of sex. This is the birds and the bees. with their wonderful, beautiful way to enter into that. Kids are going to school, they're planting, you know, the bean seed in the ground in like first grade, and it's sitting in the windowsill in their classroom, their homeroom, and it's growing. They're doing, if you have a garden at home, you know, lots of natural analogies, lots of natural symbols for understanding birth and life. So basic understanding of sex, eggs, and seeds, basic understanding of life, that all life comes from eggs and seeds. Privacy. That clip that I played for you last week of the lady talking about her five-year-old coming home and saying, I met a new friend, but I know you're not going to like my new friend, Mommy. Why won't I like your new friend? Well, because she invited me over, and her brother comes home at the end of school and she watches him have sex. Like, that's a really difficult story to hear, and to be reminded that even from a little age, our kids are exposed to things as old as, essentially, the oldest sibling of our kids' friends. So wherever they are on that arc, our kids are going to be introduced to that. I really took a lot from the birds and the bees talking about how, no matter, even at an early age, that this is private and that we don't watch. I think it was funny the way she talked about her husband, like immediately flipping the channel and being awkward and uncomfortable, but somehow his discomfort and awkwardness, but also his teaching, had soaked into that little girl. And that we know we don't watch that. I don't really know how to have that conversation yet. I haven't had it. I don't know how to have it yet, but I know that I need to. So,
we had that question thrust upon us at about 6, 7, when in our neighborhood there were only young girls for our son to play with. And we got a call from a neighbor who was a doctor, and our son had a play date with this little girl, and they were playing doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had we were not ready to talk about that 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it did open up a channel, though, that we began to talk with him. And,
yeah.
It helped. But it's different than saying your body belongs to you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're standing there next to each other showing,
mm-hmm,
why are we different?
Yeah. Well, that, you know, that's you bring up a great point, and something that Kate Ott writes about, and Natalia, yay, great book, points out, is that natural curiosity. We don't want to stifle the natural curiosity of children, and because they're typically seeing things through an innocent, a sort of innocence, that sort of doctor, playing doctor, is a part of growth and learning, and not necessarily a bad. We shouldn't necessarily look through it through the eyes purely of adulthood and concern, but we need to know that it's happening. We need to be paying attention and asking follow-up questions and having follow-up conversations. Well, you know, what did you learn? Remember that your body is your body. Remember that, you know, those kinds of things.
Well, it also goes back to the 4 and 6-year-old. I mean, right away, like, you can talk about it when it's not embarrassing and they don't even know they should be embarrassed.
Sure.
You know, I shout out in the middle of Benji. Well, was Benji a boy or a girl? My dad's there with me. He's like, in my little quiet voice, I was like, well, then how come I can't see his penis?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and it's about, but it was like early on when my mom was pregnant with a boy, and we talked about the differences between boys and girls, and you just get it out there,
yep,
early when you're not embarrassed to talk about it.
Good point. Basic definition of sex, we need to give it to our kids, and that's when, you know, to Katie's earlier question, you know, how much information are we going to give? This and... where is it? Oh, I left it on my desk. This and the other resource I have give a great 1 or 2 sentence example of how you might tell a 7-year-old what sex is or an 8-year-old what sex is without being super weird, without it being like erotic or overshare, like purely clinical, because you can actually describe these things, and we have it. We see lots of this through lots of frames of awkwardness and concern. But if we can put ourselves in our child's place, they're actually asking a question out of just pure curiosity, and we can give them simple answers. We need to, so that they know what it is. This is when likely we're going to get the question, where do babies come from? And so these two are often going to go together. The first time you have a conversation with your kid about sex is probably going to be tied somehow to when they ask you, well, how did that baby get in that mommy's uterus? I almost said tummy. Damn it. All right. Any questions about this stage? Yes.
Yeah, so I'm okay with giving information, but it's the whole sharing of information that, like, he's just going to come out with it to the server at Chili's. So how do you share it without shame, but then say, like, tell anyone about this?
That's hilarious.
My kids aren't like that, but I was as a child, and I just we had this dinner party with my dad's friends from work, and I gathered like all the children in the room and read the little book that was sent to me. And then I was thinking, like, oh, this is such a cute, like, oh, the kids are reading, and then my parents were like, oh, my God. And I was like six, so, I just had to do it and then be told, like, you know, this is how our family handles it, but families are handling it differently. As I already knew my family was really different. So they just had to say, like, you know, this is for us. We got to let the other families handle this. And I understood that. But, I mean, and so if you share so much, like you just say, like, yeah.
I think that's kind of like more our problem than it is this problem. Mm-hmm. Like, my son, we were at the CC's Pizza, he's like 2.5 years old. Music stopped and everybody got quiet, and then without any context, he just says, "So you don't have a vagina?" And like, oh. All I can do is just be calm. I didn't know that he has some powerful words. And I said, "That's right, I don't. Look at anybody else." A 2.5-year-old, and people were probably wondering what's going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just have to kind of keep calm, and that's your hang-up, right? That's kind of, I don't think it should relate to him.
But it does also freak out other parents. That's
it does.
Like if my daughter, you know, she's 6 or whatever, and she says something about her vagina when she's at a play date, and the other girl doesn't know what a vagina is, that other parent is the one that's, like, I'm going to have a conversation with her.
Sure.
And I don't know how to...
How's that conversation going to go? Yes, I told her what her vagina is.
Well, a vagina might be bad.
Yeah. No.
But what if it's something more than
that?
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
I learned what sex is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they learned it from my daughter, and that parent didn't want their kid to know that yet. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to tell my daughter, like she was saying, you know, not to give any hint of shame, but still say, this isn't something we share with everyone.
There are times when we talk about this, and there are times when we don't talk about it. And of course, we have up to a certain point control over what our kids do, and at a certain point, no control. And I think we have to be ready to have that conversation with parents. I'll share something related for us as a family, for us. Yes, apparently. You know, for us, as a family, when our kids are going to go over to somebody's house, we ask, are there any guns in your house? And if so, how do you secure them? And so when we started making that an issue about which we cared enough to have conversations with other adults, with other parents, we realized that we had to be ready to have awkward conversations with other adults and other parents. And so for us, we'd had to like cross that that imaginary line of awkwardness and tension that comes from the best possible place of parenting that we can possibly come from, and just be ready. And not that it makes it easier, and yes, our kid is going to, you know, if we start equipping them with information based on studies and surveys, our kids, if we do this according to this timeline, our kids might be way earlier knowledgeable about certain things than other kids. At the same time, we're actually in the driver's seat of the information rather than letting them just be susceptible to whatever it is that they learn from their peers or from other sources. I'm trying to feel unapologetic about this. I'm trying to own my own lack of, like, I don't want to be apologetic for the fact that I'm teaching my kid what her body parts are. I don't think we should be. And I think that's hard. It's easy for me to say, it's hard to do. I'm aware of the time and I want to keep going, okay? Ages 10 through 12, 10 through 13. Reinforce your esteem, self-esteem. Your body is good and it is wonderful. Reinforce about values, about friendship, about romantic relationships. Start talking to your kid about what does a romantic relationship look like? Holding hands. Why are people kissing? All that sort of stuff. This is when we have to give them information about the information that they need, about bodies, about the bodies of opposite sex, so that they, natural curiosity about their own bodies, somewhat of a natural curiosity about the other, but no way to access information about that. So we want to tell them about bodies. We want to, by this point, when they're 10, 11, 12, we need to have a more robust conversation about what is sex. We need to tell them about sexual orientation. If you haven't already had a conversation about how not everybody looks like what they often look like in the movies. Sometimes some people are attracted to people of the same sex. This is the perfect age to really have some important conversations about this, because guess what this age is? It's the age when kids start to get cruel. So we need to help kids be equipped to have good, healthy conversations. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the next several weeks. This is when we need to talk about the balancing of the beauty and the risk of our romantic relationships, talking about our, when we're starting to have, you know, I don't know if they call it dating, but what kids, you know, being boyfriends and girlfriends, that there's beauty and there's risk, and that's also about with intimacy, there's beauty and there's risk. 10 to 12 is when we have to have a conversation with our kids, if we haven't already, about pornography. I want to give you a few statistics. We've got 6 minutes left, so I got to hurry through this. Most boys, nearly an overwhelming majority of boys, are exposed to pornography by age 10, and girls not long thereafter. I remember seeing my first Playboy, I think I was about 9. That's just honest. Pornography has a degrading impact on our spiritual imagination. It takes all of the things, all of the goods that we made that whole list about all of the goods of sex. What is it for? And it boils it down completely and totally into a transaction of gratification. It is disembodied and bodies are holy. A number of studies show that teenagers who consume pornography on anything close to a regular basis have a much higher likelihood of viewing sex as recreational and viewing women as objects, sexual objects. There is a statistical diminishment of intimacy and relationships by men who use pornography on a regular basis. Intimacy is harder to achieve and maintain. And not just sexual intimacy. Because relationships have been boiled down again into this transaction of gratification. As Christians, we don't have unpartnered sex. We don't have sex that is unmutual. We have sex that is inherently mutual and relational. We have sex that is about relationship and fidelity. And whether you ascribe, as I do, to the idea that sex is most appropriately contained within the boundary of marriage or not, I think we can all agree that sex is intended for the safe confines of relationship and fidelity. We know that it's addictive due to lots of science about the addictive nature of it because of neurotransmitters and hormones. There's a rabbi who once said because pornography is now digitized and unbelievably easy, it is like having a brothel in your home. I think that's profound. We have to talk about our kids, talk with our kids about this. Comes back to, we don't watch people having sex. We don't watch them in person. We don't watch them online. We don't watch them on the computer. Because what happens in sex is special, is holy, and is private. Sex is not bad. Sex is good. But we don't watch other people. That conversation is an awkward conversation among all of these awkward conversations. But we have to have it. All right. With 3 minutes to go. By the time you're in 14 to 18, anybody with a 14 to 18 year old here? 13 to 18. Rachel's got a 12 year old. Yep, yep. Okay, 18, that's right. All right. Again, coming back to reinforcing values. I remember my dad always saying whenever I went out on a date, remember who you are. Did your dad or somebody ever say that to you? Remember who you are. And, yeah, dad. But the last thing he would always say, besides nothing good happens after midnight, was remember who you are, which was his way of reminding me as I headed out the door to remember my values. And I will say that to my girls, no matter what. Reinforce our hopes and our expectations for them. We can't be there to prevent them from making bad choices. We can reinforce what we hope for them. And we should frame it like that. We need to be careful about saying, putting mandates or ultimatums on our kids. We need to remind them what our hopes are for them, what our expectations are and what our hopes are. And reinforcing that sex does not equal love for boys and girls. Hopes and expectations also includes alcohol and drugs, because an overwhelming statistical, overwhelmingly in the statistics of early sexual encounters, it happens with kids who are exposed and using alcohol and drugs at an earlier age. So our kids are safer when they're not using alcohol and drugs. Give them the information they need. If we haven't already, this is the perfect time. I was 15 when I went through that exhaustive training thing, like a 12 or 15 week thing with lots of information, in my hometown, about bodies and anatomy, about sex, with lots of information, because by this point, if we're not giving it to them, they're getting it somewhere else, about contraception and consequences. Again, information does not equal permission. Your 15, 16-year-old needs to know what a condom is. They need to know what it is. They need to know what protection looks like. They need that information. They need to know about boundaries and consent. We need to teach them how to be safe. And we need to teach them that saying no, what it means to say no. All of this, flowing through all of this, is our message. In the birds and the bees, they talk about we need to know what our message is. What is boiled down the essence of what we want our kids to know about sex? For me, my message is it's a gift from God, that it has to do with not only with our bodies, but with our souls too. That it is something that requires care and responsibility. That it has the potential for joy as well as pain. That it is for adults who are consenting. And for us and our family, that we think that sex is most appropriately experienced by people who are married. For us, that context around marriage comes from a high theology of what marriage is and should be. It's not meant to be some sort of prohibitive, restrictive thing. It's just, we believe marriage is beautiful and holy. So that's where we place it. The most important thing of all that we can give our kids is to remind them that we love them, that our love is unconditional and permanent. Like, that should be through all of these conversations. So next week we're going to start the class with concluding these 4 weeks, What resources do we know? I want to spend the first 15 minutes where, I think Amy last week talked about, a resource in a church that does one of those exhaustive things. Where have you found help? Where have you found support? What are your schools doing for you who have kids who are a little bit older? What are you learning that is important that we could share with one another? And we will disseminate that information within the community and make sure that everybody has that information. I again remind you about these books. Books are a start. This book in particular was really lovely and gives great questions. Some of the other books have a pretty conservative frame, particularly around marriage and also around homosexuality. And so I took the information that seemed relevant and apropos to us, and I didn't necessarily take all of it. And I think you can do that. I'm not trying to be a la carte, but we have a different set of values around certain aspects of this than some of the authors of some of these books. But I'd be happy to share any of these books with any of you. All right. I'm sorry that all of these classes, we get to the end and there's not enough time. There's 35 minutes. Come back next week. We're going to spend the final 3 weeks of this talking about how do we understand within ourselves? How do we arrive at a place of full inclusivity, of honoring the dignity and wholeness and health of gay and lesbian persons? We'll talk about transgender identity, and we'll begin to explore that and how we as a church engage this, and how we could begin to have conversations with our kids when they're starting to like look around and realize and think and ask questions. So we're going to spend the next 3 weeks having those conversations. So we're going to take the talk and move beyond it. We'll spend the first 15 minutes just wrapping up. All right. The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
Let us pray. We thank you, Lord God, for this time. We thank you for the gift of our bodies, the goodness of our bodies, the gift of our children and the goodness of our children. Help us to raise our children to be healthy and whole, to be loving and good. Help them to be safe. Help them to embrace the gift that is sex, to understand it. Help us to be brave and courageous in our conversations, to be wise and truthful. Help us to find resources that equip us and enable us to have these important conversations with them, Lord. Give us grace in all that we do. We pray this in Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you all very much.